Good comment. Certainly then, pipelines are nothing new to Summit County. And nationally, pipelines convey 70% of the crude oil, just 4% are transported by truck. The American Petroleum Institute said in 2012, more than 474 billion gallons of crude oil and petroleum products were carried by pipeline, and claims that just 0.0005% of the haul was spilled. Of course, that's about 230 some thousand gallons, but you know, we're dealing with 474 billion. David, comment on that?
I'm gonna make a comment. You said 474 million barrels. The Trans-Alaska pipeline carries about 1 million barrels a day, 365 days a year. So, you know, suddenly when you say 70% of the oil is transported by pipeline, you know, that one pipeline, I think, really skews things. And if the Keystone pipeline were to be built, and I think it will be, you know, that'll probably be 84% that'll be by pipeline.
Okay.
I guess basically there's three options right now. One is truck. Truck is happening now. Mm-hmm. Whether the pipeline would reduce the number of trucks or not is unclear in our minds, because it depends on how much they're pumping and how much they're delivering. It would be an alternative trucks. Whether that would mean that there would be no trucks is unclear. But we also have train, and there is a proposal to take a train from Vernal to Price to match up with a very expensive process to put a train track in there. But so those are the three main ways: train, truck, and by far pipeline.
Well, let's start talking about the comparisons with trucking. We've talked about the safety of America's 2.5 million miles of pipelines. As Gary, I think you were pointing out, they age. And as David just said, the Chevron pipeline at the age of 60, it's exposed to the elements. Eventually, everything, I guess, is worn down by Mother Nature. They've been referred to by some critics as ticking time bombs. Operators point to the billions of dollars spent on new technologies. Do you want to talk about some of those new technologies? Is it possible to detect weakness in a pipeline? You had mentioned, Rob, a smart pig. You want to explain what a smart pig is? What about widespread installation of automatic or remote control shutoff valves? I would hope that Tesoro incorporates a lot of these things, if possible, in their new pipelines. And the other question I ask is, why do some have it? Why do others not? Okay, Rob?
Thank you.
That was a mouthful, so I know I'm throwing a lot.
Yeah, well, I'll address the parts of it that I remember, and if I miss something, jump in and tell me. I mentioned a smart pig earlier, and that's kind of a term that people first hear that, and they think, what the heck is a smart pig? But a pig is just a device that is run through a pipeline for many purposes, and when they were first started being used, they actually were used just to clean lines. They would put it in one end and kind of push it through the pipe to clean the liquid out of the line, or prepare it after construction. We'll run a pig through the lines just to get the water out of it after the hydro test I mentioned earlier. But what a smart pig is a pig that uses, there's several different kinds of technology for detecting corrosion or changes in the wall thickness of the pipe. And some of them use a metallic magnetic field. Other ones will use a technology that's looking for cracks, that can look for cracks along the seam of the pipe. And they have had a lot of success in the industry. They started using smart pigs in the 70s and 80s, but it has become a technology that's just really boomed. And most pipeline companies, including petroleum pipelines and gasoline pipelines, and certainly in my industry in natural gas, are using smart pigs for a lot of pipeline inspection. You can put a pig in one at a what we call a pumping station or a compressor station, and run it to another compressor station, and you can inspect 60 miles or 40 miles or 50 miles of pipe in a half a day, and it gathers a whole bunch of data in a little computer, and then that's analyzed. And technicians can go out and look at the actual, dig up the pipe. It keeps track of where it physically is along the pipe, so you can actually go dig the pipe up in that location and find what we call an anomaly, because that pig has identified some kind of an anomaly in the wall of the pipe. And then you do a visual investigation, and there's other tools that can be used to look at the pipe kind of at a microscopic level once you've dug it up and you're physically standing right there in front of it.
Okay.
What this pig is used for.
What about automatic or remote-controlled shutoff valves?
What a remote-controlled shutoff valve, there's two things. Automatic means that a valve is out there on the pipeline, and valve works just like your faucet, you know, it turns it off. But that valve that's out there on the pipeline, if it was automatic, it would have some kind of a sensor to sense a rapid change in pressure or a high change in the flow rate if there was a rupture or a leak. And that sensor would automatically send a signal to an actuator that would close the valve. Am I out of time? Because you gave me the yellow, but I'm on a new question.
It is a new question.
Okay. A remote controlled valve would have the same technology that can close it, but instead of having some sensors that automatically would tell it to close, it would have to be closed remotely from a control center, like a wherever they're going to be running this pipeline from, and all this data will be coming in. There'll be somebody. It'll look just like a control room in a power plant or something. You've got screens and you've got guys that are manning it 24/7, and they'll get an alarm and they'll see something that sees there's pressure, and they'll suspect that there is something that's caused that, like a rupture or a leak, and they'll send a signal to that and tell that valve to close. So that's the difference between those two. I assume that Tesoro would put those in on this line because it's pretty common, and especially in the liquid pipeline industry. It's even common in the gas industry, even though it doesn't have as much effect because you've still got all that gas pressure in the line. If you close the valve, you've still got a long time that there's quite a bit of that energy. With liquids, if you get the valves closed, you're still going to have a little bit of leaking, but it's going to significantly reduce how much of that product is getting out of the pipeline before you can get out there and contain it in the field.
All right, well, we hope Tesoro does that, but certainly I'm sure Mr. Jasper and the County Council will make sure that we have smart pigs and remote-controlled shutoff valves and everything else that would make it an A-plus pipeline. That's what we want to see. Chris, you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow.
County and smart pigs.
Okay. I can't wait.
We wouldn't have any other comments.
One thing that...
Designer pigs.
Ron was saying is that a lot of these monitors are pressure-based, right? So they're looking for drops in pressure, and they can be dramatic drops. The thing is, if they're subtle drops, because a typical pipeline will have some plus or minus to an ongoing pressure, if there's small, subtle drops in pressure, the system may not pick it up. And that might have happened when you have pinhole leaks, like a quarter, that was a quarter
North
size.
Dakota, yeah.
The system may not be able to detect pressure drops that small, or might think it's just ongoing noise in the system. So that's some of the challenges associated with a remote system, and that's why you back that up with actual visual, ongoing visual inspections, too.
Okay, Scott, then Bob, if you had a comment.
We've had several conversations with Tesoro about the valving, the automatic or remote valving. And, typically on a pipeline this long, they would have valve stations every 10 miles or so. And we've talked to them, and they are very understanding about our request to have valves closer than that where we have environmental concerns, especially at river crossings or along wetland areas or... things like that. So they've been very responsive in listening and agreeing with our position.
Good. Okay. Bob?
Well, I just wanted to say in Summit County, all the pigs are smart and good looking, as well as the cattle and the sheep and the mink.
Do they wear lipstick?
You know, our moderator used to be a county commissioner.
Oh,
so.
That's right. Okay, from there. Gary, did you have any input on that? Yeah, feel free.
I'd like to make a comment about besides the automatic shutoff valves, obviously visual inspection is critical. And I know from the pipelines that I've been involved with, especially a pipeline of this size, with the amount of crew that's going through this pipeline, I would assume they'd have a flyover probably at least weekly, if not twice a week. And they would probably have visual inspections, maybe drive-bys once a week. And if there was a small leak, it'd be easily detected just because you've got so much vegetation where this pipeline's going. And again, this crude is, once it leaves the pipeline and it's not heated any longer, even in the middle of the summer, it's going to come up in ground that's cold, and it's not going to go very far. And so the amount of damage, even from a pinhole leak like that, would be minimal. You're talking about probably an acre or two And I won't get into it at the moment, but I do know the remediation work on soil and what crude, not refined products, but crude does do to the surface and how it can be actually beneficial to the surface in the long run.
On a more serious note, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had a collision on Parley Summit with one of the oil tankers.
Right.
And it went down the road and into a storm drain built into the highway system and just about got to the creek. So that made us a little skeptical about what the temperature in the waxy, because this was not the hottest day of the year. So it did flow, and it flowed out of a truck. So.
Yeah, and that tanker was carrying about 8,400 gallons, and they spilled about 4,500 gallons, which is small compared to some of the leaks that you hear about. Let's talk about the federal government, and let's talk about federal government regulation. Are the feds protecting us? If our lawsuit, this county lawsuit, doesn't work, let's talk about the state and the federal government. Does anyone know what the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, called PHMSA, does? Perhaps you oil and pipeline guys, have you ever heard of PHMSA? It's a small governmental organization. What are they doing to help us? Anyone? Rob? Gary?
I have operated oil and gas properties on federal lands, and compared to state and local governments, they are much more strict. And as far as cleanup, when there was a small spill, they were much more strict than any state or local government. So that's my only time I've ever dealt with the federal government. It was on a property in New Mexico.
Okay. Bob, have you had any experience with the federal government in any of these type of matters?
Well, we tried to get some grant funding for them to write our own ordinances, and we missed the deadline. You know, that goes back, Bob, to why we felt the need to adopt our own ordinances. First of all, it's on private land. And you know, it's not just the rivers. The Camas Valley is like a giant wetland sponge. And most of the water that we use in the whole Salt Lake Valley is coming either out of the Provo or, well, there's the Bear and others. But we just felt strongly that was, we didn't want to depend on just federal regulations, particularly as it applied to private lands in the county. So, no, we haven't had that much contact with them. My staff has looked at what their rules are and how they did it, and that was some of the information we used to draft our ordinances. We just felt the need that we need to do it locally for our own people.
I'm not sure why, but the agency requires that only 44% of all the hazardous liquid lines be subject to their inspection criteria and inspected regularly. Perhaps that's because they only have 137 inspectors nationwide. And as Gary probably knows, maybe Rob as well, it's often the industry that inspects its own pipelines through the process. The Fed and the state inspectors review their paperwork and conduct audits, but most on-site inspections are done by inspectors on the company's dime. Tom, did you have a comment?
Just a couple of comments that, not about PHMSA, but federal. First off, on the pipeline inspection, having lived on top of the Chevron line my whole life, I don't remember having Chevron people out on the property with any frequency until about the last 4 years. And whether it was the Red Butte spill or changes in federal regulations or something else that got their attention, they are out there frequently, regularly. They are in frequent contact with the property owners. So there's a very definite change in the level of on-site management from there. In terms of the federal agency, one of the questions that I've been trying to get answered and can't is a Forest Service driven decision. If the line stayed on the north side of Highway 35, it would never cross the South Fork of the Provo River. But it puts it on Forest Service land for about a quarter mile in an area that's been a designated roadless area, not a wilderness area, but a roadless area. And I don't know if Tesoro just said, geez, changing that to get the roadless area boundary shifted 40 feet is insurmountable, or if the Forest Service said we can't do it because roadless areas will, you know, they're inviolable and we can't change that. But the end result is that after studying it, they concluded that it was better design in terms of getting this thing built to cross the South Fork of the Provo River twice rather than to fudge the boundary of the roadless area. And I think that was a very odd decision driven by Forest Service bureaucracy, as best I can tell. Oddly enough, there's a snowmobile trailhead parking lot in the roadless area, but we can't, you know, move the boundary for the oil pipeline.
Okay. Other comments on this particular issue? All right. Can the oil be refined somewhere else, like at the source? You know, we it's in Uinta. We send it all the way to North Salt Lake. No new refineries have been built in the last 40 years. Why not?
Well, it's kind of obvious nobody wants a new refinery in their backyard. And refineries are usually only built along pipelines because it's not economical to ship large quantities of oil by truck and rail. And so there's a very good chance we won't have any more refineries built in this country. What the refineries are doing now is they're expanding and expanding and expanding on their sites where they already are. We haven't touched on that brings up a point. We haven't really touched on the advantages of trucking versus pipeline yet. Are we going to touch on that in a few minutes?
Yes.
Well, I'll go ahead and start.
Okay. let's look at some of the positive impacts.
Yeah.
And Tesoro will reduce truck traffic
obviously it's,
by 250
yeah, I mean,
trucks.
Eliminating 250 trucks a day from our highways, if you look at the pollution, the amount of energy used, the amount of wear and tear on our highways. I don't have any numbers, but they're obtainable. And so to eliminate 250 trucks a day from our highways would be a tremendous improvement on traffic, wear and tear on our highways, and less energy used to transport that, and a tremendous amount of pollutants taken out of the air. There was a comment earlier, and I've read that there was a question, would it totally eliminate truck traffic? Well, not necessarily, but they're putting this pipeline in because it's an economical way to move this crude, and if there's that much more crude in the future, which there may or may not be, and it requires additional trucks, if the refinery is large enough to handle additional crude, they might put in another pipeline, because that's one thing you generally do when you put in a right-of-way. You can always put in another 12-inch pipeline. You have that right-of-way, and they'll put it on the same right-of-way, because once the right-of-way is in there the first time, it's much easier and much more economical to put in a second pipeline. But obviously, there's a reason they're putting in this pipeline. It's because of the efficiency of moving crude, and to build a refinery somewhere else, it wouldn't make any sense. Tesoro's here to stay. If Tesoro wasn't here, we could probably get crude to us. To this valley, but it would probably cost a tremendous amount, and we'd have to truck it or bring it in by rail.
Let me give you the... well, go ahead, Tom, and then I'll...
I was just going to say, I've had a number of discussions with people about the idea of building the refinery in Duchesne. That doesn't solve anything, because the market for the refined product is still the Wasatch Front. So you've got gasoline in Duchesne that then doesn't magically land in your tank. It has to be piped or trucked or in some way transported, and from everything I've been able to read, I'd a lot rather have a waxy crude oil spill on my property than gasoline spurting under 1,500 pounds pressure.
Right. David?
I'll add a little bit. That you might say, well, why don't they just build the refinery in Roosevelt? Well, they had a refinery in Roosevelt, and it was shut down in 1994. They had some issues with the Clean Water Act, putting too much ammonia, I believe, into the Roosevelt sewer system. And, it was shut down. It was initially mothballed, and eventually it got hauled off, as I understand it. That was a Pennzoil refinery. They were curiously interested as much in the paraffin as they were in the oil. Apparently, they make a lot of money off that paraffin to keep us waxing our skis, maybe. But it was a separate product, and they shipped that oil, I believe, back east to Pennsylvania to a refinery.
Chris, did you have a comment?
My question is if you're not interested in refining it to its finished products, is there at least a way to refine it to maybe remove that paraffin, kind of a semi-refining process or preliminary refining process that removes the waxy portion of it, leaves you with a more traditional crude oil that then can be pipelined, without having to heat it. You know, and that's because it's the wax that's going to potentially build up on the line if it cools, et cetera, and that causes the problem. So that's my question with respect to a middle ground in refining. I don't know if that, Gary, can you?
I am familiar with refineries to some degree, and basically you'd end up with a refined product, so it'd be a whole different set of regulations, and it's not just removing paraffin. It would be removing part of the petroleum. No, it's not quite that simple.
Let's go back for a second to that truck traffic, because I will, Gary, give you the counterpoint. And what I'm quoting from is a letter to the editor from a lady by the name of Frances Remillard, who is a South Summit resident, I believe. And she wrote a letter to the editor back August 1st. And she quoted the UDOT truck traffic on Utah Highways 2012 report, which basically said that there are over 18,800 trucks 18,800 trucks on I-80 passing Jeremy Ranch each day, and 2,700 trucks on US 40 passing through Heber each day. She concluded that clearly building a pipeline to reduce truck volume does not begin to solve the truck volume problem. So that's kind of a counterpoint if you want to respond. Certainly.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, 250 trucks is 250 trucks. Right. You eliminate it, and how much pollution does 250 trucks eliminate from the atmosphere running back and forth? How far do they go? 150 miles each way every day? And how much petroleum do they burn going back and forth? How much wear and tear do they put on our highways that we have to replace every 10 years, every 20 years with taxpayer dollars? I mean, it's 250 trucks out of 18,000, but it's 250 trucks.
Okay. Just putting it in perspective. David?
We should be smart about our usage of energy. We're apparently not smart in making ethanol. It costs about as much energy to make a gallon of ethanol as you get out of a gallon of ethanol, but you add a little bit of federal money and it works. We ought to be moving this oil from, you know, where it comes from, the Uinta Basin, to where it's going to be refined in the most efficient manner, energy-wise, that we can. And, you know, I'm going to assume Tesoro knows their business, and that's with it. Regarding the truck traffic, I did a little bit of internet research and found three fatal head-on collisions with double tanker trucks in the last 12 months. One outside of Roosevelt, one outside of Mighton, and one at Strawberry Reservoir. Several accidents that didn't result in fatalities, and a couple that resulted in spills. One of which, you know, we saw go down in Salt Lake County, and one of which somewhere in the Uinta Basin didn't go very far at all. Maybe it was in January, I don't know. But people are getting killed. People are losing their husbands, their fathers, and whatnot. This isn't a good thing to do. It's not smart energy-wise. It's not smart safety-wise. If we can put in a smart pipeline, put it in the right place, and see that it's properly monitored, I think we'll all be better off.
Okay, let me pause for station identification. This is KPCW, Park City, Utah, 91.9 on your FM dial. And now back to our program. Let's conclude. We'll ask one more question and then throw it to the audience for their questions. We'll get some closing comments from you gentlemen. But again, on a positive note, what about jobs and the economy? Is there a positive local effect? Start with Bob and anybody else who wants to weigh in if you have any ideas.
Well, I just wanted to add that KPCW is transmitted from a county repeater site. A little plug for the county. I'm sure there are some jobs. During the construction season, there'll be some employment and some tax base. And there will be ongoing tax base because we get to tax the assessed value of a pipeline. But I don't see it as a big, the jobs are not. They're either down in the refineries in Salt Lake or they're on where the oil is coming from in the Vernal area.
Okay. All right, let's get some concluding comments and thoughts from the panel before we open it to for audience questions. Chris, you grab the mic. Do you have a few other things you'd like to get out before we ask the audience for questions?
As an engineer, I kind of mirror what Dave has been saying, that if properly designed, constructed, operated, and maintained, and monitored, a pipeline is a much more efficient way to conveying this oil to the Salt Lake refineries. And it's also less risky to the environment, because there are just too many moving parts associated with trucking, or another 250 trucks on the highway. And there's just too much possibility for problems to occur and environmental impacts to occur. So that's kind of like, that's where I fall as far as yay or nay with respect to the pipeline. But again, there's a lot of that goes into making sure that, like Sarah was saying, it's an incredibly complicated design and construction, and making sure that you get it right and that it has a lot of integrity associated with it in its operation and maintenance and monitoring. So,
Tom, as somebody whose property is affected by that, do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I've lived with the Chevron line for 60 years now, and we've never had a spill. We've had one little leak that they responded to very quickly. And I look at the truck traffic, and we get a lot of it coming over Wolf Creek Pass, which seems odd, but they're avoiding something on Highway 40, probably the Highway Patrol. But they, I look at the double-rigged tanker trucks coming down the curves on Highway 35, and if one tips over, that's in the river immediately. I'm convinced that the pipeline is a safer mechanism for transporting the oil.